A lot of different species, tough luck, unfortunately. So it's more, you know, I think if we had half the population, we would still have approximately the same number of entrepreneurs out there willing to kill off species just for the convenience of it all.
In 1972, in May 2031, there was a letter from Comptroller General of the United States, Washington, D.C., to Senator Schweiker, talking about cloud seeding activities carried in and out the United States under the program supported by federal agencies. And there is a number of agencies. At that time, there was a humongous amount of money that was directed to this, which was $61,420, year 72. That's okay. But now we have article from this year, scientists in the U.S. are flying planes into the clouds to make it snow more. And then we have a cloud seeding, the whole article in Wikipedia. I thought it ended. Back to you.
Well, I understand that they've been playing around with cloud seeding for many, many years and talk about controlling the weather. There's people out there who think already that there are satellites that control all the weather. And all the disasters are actually evil people controlling the world. There's a lot of things that this government pays for that are complete nonsense. There is a great book that they made into a movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats, in which Army Intelligence, and just think about that term, Army Intelligence, put up a certain branch and gave them money to psychically endanger people. The idea was combat weapons of EST and such. So they were trying to walk through walls. They were trying to control goats for some strange reason, and all kinds of things. And this there was a budget that someone approved for these research fields. So there's a lot of research that's just wasted money. Just because people are going to spend money on a project does not mean it makes any sense whatsoever. It just would indicate the psychological problems of the people who manage our government budget.
Okay. So the last one that I have is, world's largest iceberg has calved from Antarctica over the past few days. That started in 2021, but now is absolutely parting. It's 80 times of the size of Manhattan, and we have February almost, and we didn't have a snow in New York. Isn't that telling you something? And to Adrian.
Well, I believe in climate change. Just about every climate scientist believes in climate change. A lot of politicians believe in climate change. The fossil fuel industry wrote research papers in the 1970s about climate change, although they didn't feel it necessary to publicize the minor problem of everything melting. And to a degree, even the usual suspects who kind of tend to poo-poo it all have kind of shifted their gaze somewhat and have different attitudes that, well, what can you do? That's just, it's natural to have it do that. And we didn't cause it, it just happened. And the slightly weirder ones who think that God is just going to save us in the end, like he did in Noah's time. So I don't know what to tell you, but yeah, I believe in climate change as a big problem that is not being addressed. It is being moved around. It's being hidden under a cup, under a carpet, under all kinds of things. But basically, people at the very most are kind of giving it lip service. The Chinese are completely BSing everyone by telling them that they're green as they put it more and more coal-based electric generators online there. So it's a problem. At least we're not going to get any snow in the long term. We may burn out our air conditioners come July, but what can you do?
that's all for tonight from me. We may ask Jeff, AC2PL, if he has any ham radio questions more, because his reaction wasn't pretty nice and polite. He has a problem with concentration. I don't like it. Enter exchange.
WB2CQG.
Yes.
Roy, did you hear the story about a guy named Walker that works for Pfizer? He's the head director of research and development, and he was caught on video saying things that he wouldn't want the general public to hear. And when he discovered the person asking him the questions, he grabbed the Apple tablet and smashed it because he thought that that would take the records away from us seeing it. And I sent it to you, and I wonder if you know the story.
AC2GS. Well, I didn't check my mail in the last 5-10 minutes, so you might have sent it during that time. I saw it. I saw it all. The guys at Veritas are scuzzy pieces of crap, unfortunately. They twist things around regularly. They have been shown up to be frauds repeatedly. This guy is, I think, 35 years old. He's a urologist. He's not a virologist. He has nothing really to do, as far as I'm aware, with that aspect of the field. He's a middle management guy at Pfizer who thought he was on a date with a guy and drinking alcohol and getting drunk and BSing his date, like we have all BSed our dates in the past, except that this piece of crap recorded him and tried to trap him repeatedly. He kept on suggesting that Pfizer was using a technology that is deemed not appropriate. The guy repeatedly said it wasn't, but the first guy kept on saying, well, it's the same thing, and he says, well, not really. So, and then you had the skeevy guy who's repeatedly done this before as a voiceover twisting the words. So most of this is BS, in my humble opinion. And I've watched it all. And, of course, if you have some middle management pharmaceutical guy who BS a possible boyfriend and had it recorded and is going to be played on YouTube, you'd have a hissy fit as well, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you for your review of the story. But one of the things he did say was that they're working on making COVID-19 variants. In other words, well, I don't know, it's too technical. And I'll review it, and thanks again for your review on it.
Yeah, it is common practice in studying a virus to see the different ways it randomizes. Unfortunately, it's not a very useful method because the way that Omicron came into existence is on the basis of millions and millions of infections and then exposing it to millions of other people and the increased infectivity selected for it and the environment was a big factor. And when you downsize it to a couple of monkeys in a lab, you're not going to get a great deal. But one of the things to be concerned of is what viable ways the virus tends to evolve and mutate into. So that's legitimate studies. Again, it was kind of twisted by these right-wing nutjobs who have repeatedly twisted people's words and played games with editing video. So I feel bad for this unfortunate guy who really wanted to find himself a boyfriend. I don't know. If a pretty girl took you out and got you drunk and you felt a little bit ginned up and you wanted to inflate your ego and tell some white lies, you know, who hasn't been there? I don't know who.
All right. We don't know if he was telling company secrets or making things up to impress somebody. That's what we don't know at this point. Anyway, I'll just be listening. I'm enjoying the conversation. Go ahead.
Okay, very well. Thank you for participating. Let me tell you my short little story. We've been talking about ChatGPT, which is an artificial intelligence designed and running from OpenAI, a company that Microsoft has invested about $1 billion in. And they are the people that have the more well-known artificial intelligence known as GPT. That's Golf Papa Tango. Usually it's the GPT 3.0 people see, or GPT 3. This is a little bit more advanced, GPT 3.5. And it was trained on the internet specifically for conversation. So it is more polite than standard GPT, but also more gullible, and will kind of give in on any kind of argument. If you try, and I have, to argue with it, it will apologize profusely and correct itself whether you said something correct or not. So it can be fallible. Anyway, there was, let me drop for a sec. Okay, there was a recent run of articles that people had tested it with bar exam questions and medical exam questions and MBA questions and had passed all those exams. So it really interested me, and it's not that difficult to get a simulated extra exam. The question pool is available, and AA9PW has an excellent exam tool program that you can take exams and grade yourself and figure out your weaknesses and your strengths. So I figured I'd put the two of them together, and I plugged in an extra exam to ChatGPT. The extra exam is 50 questions. You need to get 37 answers correct or more to pass. One of the questions, unfortunately, was an illustrated question. One of the limitations of ChatGPT is it is totally a text-based text-based artificial intelligence. So there's no place to shove a graphic anywhere. It can't see. It's considered blind. Usually for the FCC and for the VEs, you can generate exam booklets that are designed for people with sight problems. They will eliminate the illustrated questions in the question pool. But nevertheless, I had 50 questions. One of them had an illustration, so he got that one wrong. It got that one wrong. So what surprised me was as I was asking the questions and marking the answers, I noticed that there were more than a few incorrect answers cropping up in its algorithm. So when I finally tallied the score, it had gotten a score of 37 correct answers. So it just barely passed, but it did pass. I don't know if I repeated the experiment with another portion of random public pools. Question pools, it would have come out 37, it might have come out 36, but it would have failed. Let me break for a second, I'll be right back. Okay, on further reading of these articles about the bar exam and the medical exam, and likewise, I noticed that there was a trend. A lot of the articles said that they passed, but they didn't really pass. They weren't shining candidates. It wasn't that they passed with a 96% or something. They just kind of barely passed. So this seems to be a trend with ChatGPT. It's able to get reasonably good exam results, but not particularly great exam results. Now, I thought that there was a possibility since the computer was, the artificial intelligence was trained directly off of the internet before, I think it's 2021 was when they stopped training it. I thought it was possible that it had followed the entire published question for the VE exam, so it would just pull it out of memory. But obviously getting only 37 out of 50 right, it didn't do that. It basically appears to have synthesized the answer based on taking apart the question and such. So I personally thought that that was interesting. If anyone has any comments about this, please feel free.
An error has occurred. Your security key is not valid. If this error persists, send email to installs@irlp.net.
The power is to be, it's a, this is Bill being on IRLP, but since we don't have a link, he's probably not listening to much. Anyway, once again, if anyone has any particular comments about this subject or anything related, please feel free, hit that push to talk button.
The brief double.
Yes, I think that's Jeff.
Someone was doubling with you.
Oh, well, what can I tell you? So everything that I said was completely not understandable?
The last 5 seconds, was it?
Oh, gosh, the whole damn thing, jeez. Anyway, I'll sum it up a little bit. Hopefully that idiot, I don't know what their problem is personally. ChatGPT, I gave the extra exam to it. It answered 37 questions correctly. That's the bare minimum. One of the questions was an illustration it couldn't handle. The others, it just got wrong. So it didn't just have a record of the published pool questions. It synthesized answers enough to pass, but just to pass.
I'm sorry, my apologies. Just a comment after the IRLP thing was identifying. But everyone else got what you said previously, so yeah, we understand. Thank you.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood. I don't know. The IRLP thing kind of will spit out stuff, and so sometimes people will think that I'm doubling with a person and I'm just doubling with a robot on the IRLP notes. Anyway, one last attempt. If anyone has any comments, questions, or statements before we close this segment, this is a good time as any.
KD2WNY2H.
Yeah, Chris recognized Lou. What's happening there?
All right, I heard your comment before, so I've been doing some investigating. I've been looking at some log files, and we probably had about 4 or 5 disconnects tonight from IRLP. And what it is called a COS lock, which means that the IRLP node, our node, is being keyed up for over 4 minutes. That's probably a result of, I think I initially when we put the All-Star stuff in, we were having some, if you remember that first session of the TechNet, it was troublesome. So I think I took off the timeout completely, but now, of course, you know, you squeeze the bag in one direction and it bursts in the other direction. So it seems that the COS lock is a result of that. So I got to figure out a way to remedy that. Maybe I'll put a timeout of 3 minutes and 50 seconds or something on the Selden link, and hopefully we won't have the initial problem we had. Other than that, I just heard a message about our keys being invalid, which I was in there SSHing, so maybe I generated it, because that would be a problem. So that has me a little bit asunder here. But other than that, so I'm looking at it. But the dropouts aren't that many. In fact, in the last 4 weeks, maybe there was 15 or 20 of them in total.
Okay, I just noticed a lot tonight. I'm staring my window in front of my face. I got 15 different windows going on, and the one smack in front of my face is IRLP, because I wanted to keep an eye. And everyone connected has kind of gone and come back and gone and come back. John left us a few times from Los Alamos. Ontario checked in, as they always do, at 8:30. I think it's completely automated at this point, because no one talked through that IRLP for years. And when something caused them to disconnect at something like 8:35, because it's automated, it didn't reconnect again, so they were gone. So I've been seeing connections blinking on and off all night. It was not that many, but it was enough to be a little weird.
Yeah, what'll happen is, I think about every 10 minutes, if it sees it's not connected to the reflector, it'll reconnect. So the downtime will be anywhere from 0 to 10 minutes, and then it'll reconnect. But I'll look further into it.
Okie doke. Thanks for all that you do. It's a thankless job, so I keep on thanking you. It's hard work, and I'm sure you'll figure out the right tweak setting for it to accomplish what it needs to.
Yeah, and by the way, I agree with you 100% on the whole O'Keefe matter and their track history. So, you know, they're selling clicks. They're selling clicks and stirring the pot. But, you know, it's all part of the post-truth era.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. These guys have been known as grifters from the very beginning, and the farce of calling their output Veritas, which is Latin for truth, you know, talk about cynical irony. But, you know, I don't think it's going to last very long. I think most people are going to forget it, you know, in a week or two, and there'll be some other nonsense that vaccines magnetize people or that it's made out of alien DNA or something equally inane. Human beings, you got to love them.
That you do. All right. NY2H, clear back to net.
Okay. Chris, you wanted to say something?
Yes. I just wanted to make a comment on that, the ChatGPT thing. I think it would be probably interesting to repeat that experiment. I mean, it's a 400-question pool. You know, if it was consistently, you know, at 37 or, you know, it got better or worse over time or something.
Well, keep in mind that the nature of ChatGPT is not that it's presently learning. Generally speaking, there are artificial intelligence that are continually learning and modifying the settings related to the input and output. I think it was Google that tried that with a Reddit thread, and unfortunately the Reddit users trained the artificial intelligence to be a racist Nazi, so they took that down rather quickly. So I think the general design of artificial intelligence is they train it without human beings present and under supervised manner, and then they lock it down. Now, you can kind of train it for the short term. ChatGPT has something that are called threads, and within a thread, you can convince it of all kinds of foolish things because it's a very affable, pleasant-going AI. So you can explain that 2 plus 2 is equal to 8, and if you do it forcefully enough, it won't argue with you. It will apologize for telling you 1 plus 1 is 2 and go on within that thread with the incorrect math logic. So you can modify it for the thread, but once you leave that thread, it resets to its baseline. So I guess there would be an interesting difference between doing more exams within that thread and see if inside that thread things change versus how they would be affected outside the thread. So that's food for thought.
KD2WOT. So is it just completely static at this point, or is it, you know, I mean, typically the purpose of a beta is that, you know, there's some sort of an improvement going on.
The design is static at
Welcome
this point.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club computer system.
Take the model and change it and train it some more. But right now, they stopped training it about a year or two ago. So if you asked any kind of questions, say about George Santos, it would probably say, "Who is that?" Because it doesn't read the newspapers. So it's a static trained algorithm at this point. But there will be other iterations in the future. You know, they're trying to make bigger servers that are capable of much more massive artificial intelligences. And you can train them for different specialties. This particular model is terrible at math. for the reasons that I gave you. And on the front page it says, by the way, this artificial intelligence can give you fallible, incorrect information. So be aware of that. So it's a work in progress. It's very, very interesting. Some people are kind of taking it a little more seriously, probably, than they should. Other people a little bit less than they should, but that's the nature of things.
What established the initial pool of knowledge or artificial intelligence, if you will?
As far as I'm aware, the data sets are based on massive dumps of the internet, and but with a level of management, making sure that it didn't read things that were of questionable value, things like 4chan or some Reddit thread. So it was a managed full dump of the internet of text. There are other artificial intelligence that are trained on graphically, so they're shown an almost endless stream of images that were taken off of the internet. Those are the ones that you can also see on YouTube, where you can write anything textually and the computer will generate an artificial picture of whatever person. If you say Barbara Streisand eating a popsicle in front of a red house, they'll give you four images approximately of that, and you can pick the one that's best, and you can increment it to something slightly different. You could add more text words that would narrow the definition of the illustration. So it depends on what you're training it on, and the ChatGPT was through conversational English and a lot of internet material.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, it's a pretty wild technology. It's going to take a while to absorb it. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Roy. This is KB2WOT on the site.
Welcome, Chris. Thanks for participating. Thanks for everyone who participated tonight. It was kind of a little bit of a slow and a little bit of a sleepy Sunday. The chat room was all practically silent. Sometimes things are hectic, sometimes they're not. But I thank everyone who participated. I hope everyone will come back next week when we do it again. But now is certainly time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2S.
Okay, thanks for it. AC2GS WS2N. Very good. And if you want to see how AI could go terribly wrong, it's a pretty good movie out. It's called Megan. It's very well done. What this kid does is incredible. I won't tell you what it does because somebody might want to see it. But it's rated PG, so you can bring your kids and grandkids to this thing. It's not too terrible. Wesley, I was talking to him before the net, and he brought up Scotland as a new launch facility that they built there, which is true, and Virgin orbital is now taking off from there. They launched a rocket attached to the wing called Launcher 1, and they did that recently, a couple of weeks ago, but unfortunately it failed. The 747 got up to the height, 40,000 feet, and then dropped the rocket like it's supposed to, and then rockets go off, first stage, second stage, fine. But then after that, something went wrong, and they failed to get their satellites into orbit. And that was the first time England felt that something was being launched from their territory into space. So maybe they could try again shortly. We'll see. If not, there's another company called Obex, which is they're building the Prime rocket. Prime rocket is a little bit bigger than the Electron rocket that Rocket Lab presently flies. Rocket Lab is way ahead of the game, though they've launched 33 over maybe 3 or 4 years. But there'll be another company called Obex, and they hope to launch sometime this year from Scotland as well.
So just wanted to answer that from I was talking to Wesley. Let me drop it. Okay. By the way, I'm glad John's back. I don't know if the link is still open, but if he is, welcome back, John from Los Alamos. The Boeing company is about to launch their Starliner in April. And they've done it once, actually twice before. The first time was just a test to see how each year worked and all. So last time that they launched, they successfully got to the International Space Station. First time, it didn't work out. They were supposed to get to the space station, but they weren't able to do it due to computer errors, and they redesigned everything. And then subsequent launch to the space station was successful. Now they're ready for a crew flight. You know, this is the same Starliner type of vehicle. And this time they'll launch two astronauts for their first test at the space station. They'll probably stay a week or so. And the people that are going to go up is Barry Wilmore and Suni Williams. Suni Williams, she's been around a long time as an astronaut. And they've both been trying, helping Boeing get this craft developed probably for the last 4 years. So they're behind the schedule. At one time they thought they'd be able to beat Dragon to the space station, but unfortunately not with the problems that they had. The Dragon has got like six flights to the space station with crews from NASA. And but Boeing will not be outdone after the two-person flight. Hopefully successful in April, their next flight will also contain four astronauts. And then they'll switch on and off. Each company will probably have one flight per year to the space station. You know, this way they'll always still be able to keep seven people aboard the space station. You know, four in air vehicle, and then always three from the Soyuz spacecraft from the Russians. Let me just drop it and see if anybody has a comment.
Easy to kill.
That call went by quick. Go.
Sorry, easy to kill. You said Sunita has been around for a long time. She might take exception to that comment. Just hi.
You bring up our tour through the space station, and this is quite a few years ago. All the modules were not in place yet, but most of them were, and she'll take you on a complete tour through that space station. Other astronauts have done it, but ours is very well done. And we'll see. Oh, well, look at Peggy. What's she's going to be going up as a pilot for a private mission. Private meaning everybody's going, it has really nothing to do with NASA, and they're going to be going on a Dragon as well, also up to the space station. So they're only staying for probably 10 days or so, unless it's bad weather, and they will stay longer. But she's got the record for, Peggy has the record for the longest time collectively on a space station. You know, so you get guys like Kelly, Scott Kelly has been up there for almost a whole year. Collectively, Peggy Woodson has more time than I. But she's not with NASA anymore, but she'll be, she's not doing NASA flights anymore, so she's going to be piloting this other commercial flight to the space station. Anyway, I just want to talk about Vulcan. Vulcan rocket, will be the replacement for the Atlas V rocket. Replacement for the Delta IV rocket.
what I was talking about before with the Boeing Starliner going up. Presently, when it goes up in April, it'll be on top of an Atlas V rocket. Now, an Atlas V rocket has flown many, many times, probably almost 90 flights, I guess. And they've never flown people on board that flight on that Atlas V yet. So this will be the first time that putting the Starliner on top of that. So, a couple of flights from now, or a couple of years from now, that rocket will be phased out, and the new Vulcan rocket will be replacing it. It's more powerful, runs on a completely different fuel. Atlas V runs on a kerosene type of fuel, where this thing, Vulcan, runs on liquid methane and liquid oxygen. And the two main boosters, the two main engines for the first main booster is being built by Blue Origin, which is, Jeff Bezos from Amazon. He's got the Blue Origin company. They've completed the engines. Years and years of testing them. Finally deliver them to Boeing a while back. And on the bottom is going to be two of these things. Each one puts out around 550,000 pounds of thrust. And then on top of that, they also have solid booster rockets built by Grumman, which will be on the side of Vulcan. Vulcan can carry up to six of those particular solid booster rockets. So my guess is they'll probably have two of them attached when they do have a crew flight of a Starliner going to the space station. That should be interesting. I'm guessing that will probably be about 4 years from now at the earliest. Nobody has any questions. We'll continue on. Finally, Link. Don't know if Frank is out there. Unlike Rory, I don't have a computer. I can't tell who's on or who's not on. But all I can do is leave a big enough board. Anyway, the Electron rocket built by Rocket Lab, owned by Peter Beck, successfully took off from Wallops Island last Tuesday. It was supposed to take off on Monday, but due to the rainy weather we had here, which, Virginia is relatively close to here, it launched from Virginia, from Wallops Island. We have a couple of launch complexes set up there. That's where they usually launch the Antares rocket with the Cygnus spacecraft on top to bring cargo to the space station. Now we have another launch complex next to that, which is going to be launching the Electron rocket on a regular basis for Rocket Lab. So, the first day, Monday, it rained. Tuesday at exactly 6 p.m. It went off on time, which is nice. Sometimes they have delays. They had a two-hour window. They didn't need that. The Electron rocket took off, successfully separated its booster, and then the second stage ignited and pushed these three satellites from, they're called Hawkeye 360 satellites, which are nothing but big receivers. The goal of these Hawkeye 360 satellites is to receive signals from Earth and to try to figure out, if there's going to be any problems with jamming or anything. They could figure it out. If there's going to be jamming attempts for GPS satellites, these things would know about it. Many of these Hawkeye satellites up there, they receive signals from, actually, they wrote it up from 144 megahertz, which is, of course, 2 meters all the way up to a couple of gig. So, yeah, it does the L band, different bands. They could tell if there's any kind of interference going on, which is, you know, very good for us. It was sent on a 40-degree inclination, and there'll be many more. A couple of them were launched earlier on, and they're successfully doing what they're doing, receiving on UHF, VHF, the X-band, the L-band, the S-band, all of them. But they were launched by SpaceX. SpaceX had a problem with one of their they call them transporters, that these satellites would normally sit on. And this company said, well, look, we're going to go with Electron. They called up Rocket Lab and said, you know, let's launch on your Electron rocket. Inside of no time, Peter Beck had them on top of the rocket, and off they went to their proper location, and also into a pole, into a 40-degree inclination, which is the most popular area that they're always concerned about, where there could possibly be interference or problems. Like I said, anywhere from 2 meters up to, you know, 18 gigahertz. I haven't seen a close-up of the satellite yet, but you know what the antennas look like. It's supposed to have, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 antennas attached to this thing for all the different bands. Come across a good picture of it, not just a, you know, a small picture. Good with deep detail and all the different antennas. I was looking for it. I haven't found it. I'll send it over to Roy, you know, next week. I always find that interesting. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. Artemis is back. That's the one that went to the moon and back, launched on the SLS Space Launch System. Successfully returned to the Pacific Ocean. All the data that they're collecting, they're going to have to go through this stuff. And what I was reading from NASA is that they collected over 4 terabytes of data just from the onboard stuff that was on board that was transmitted back. But then they have other information. You know, once it was landed, they have these dummies they took apart with all kinds of sensors on board, and I think 1,000 different types of detectors on each dummy, you know, for radiation, heat, temperature, humidity, vibration, acceleration. They're going to go through all this stuff, and they said there was 31 terabytes of data that everybody's going to have to go through. They made a comparison. They said all the, you go to the Library of Congress in Washington and figure out all the amount of information that's at the Library of Congress. They said that's around 20 terabytes. From this one mission for, you know, not even a month, 25 days, instead of the 20 terabytes that the Congress, all the books would hold, it's 31 terabytes, more than that. So that was an interesting piece of information I came across. You know, it's going to keep all the engineers and scientists busy for a long, long time. But anyway, the preliminary results are this thing was like a 99% successful flight, which means that within a year, they will probably be ready to send a crew on a similar flight, orbiting the moon and then returning. And then another year or so after that, they plan on sending Artemis 3, which would actually be a landing. We'll see if this all comes about. It should be interesting. And then if that goes well, they'll have a flight every year for many, many years to come. I mean, NASA has plans on at least 40 flights. So for the next 40 years, they would be planning on launching Artemis rockets. So we'll see how the manifest works over all those years, how much stuff they can bring to the moon. Any comments? Okay, this topic is very popular for these space sites that I usually go to. I think probably every one of them has a story about this nuclear thermal rocket engine that NASA and DARPA are planning on actually collectively building together, which is good. You know, if you take money that's allocated to NASA, they won't take it all. That, you know, Mike, they'll take the other half from DARPA and pour it into building a nuclear thermal rocket engine to put on a rocket for a test by 2027. You know, so they're going to start now. Inside of 4 years, they plan on launching this thing. You know, DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, they always do a lot of weird things. And they really want this. And, of course, NASA would love to have it. You would be able to cut the time, for instance, going to Mars in half. You know, you'd make it in 3 months instead of 6 months. It's a fission-type reactor that they would have on board. Creating a lot of heat. And then you have the fuel. The fuel would be stored as liquid hydrogen in a big tank. And that liquid hydrogen would have pumps behind it, and it would go into the area where the thermal reaction is occurring from the fission, you know, from uranium. And, they know it works, this type of thing. They've actually tested it 50 years ago. They were running tests on stuff like this. But you can have a tremendous amount of pressure, this hydrogen being forced out of the back, maybe three times more powerful than, or three times more thrust than what you would normally get with a chemical reaction. They wouldn't launch this thing from Earth because, you know, there would be picket signs all around Cape Canaveral, I would think. But they plan on launching pieces individually in space by regular chemical reaction rockets. Assemble a couple of pieces together in a hydrogen tank and the fission reaction section, you know, in space. So that's the present plan. And then if they launch it to the moon or to Mars, you know, it's going away from Earth. No chance of it ever, you know, returning to Earth orbit, causing a problem. Although they believe that this type of system with solid nuclear fuel on board would never have, you know, the chance would be like probably 1 in 10 million that it would just, you know, get into the atmosphere. So they think time has gone by, and they think the public would be behind us. Well, we'll have to find out how it goes if they make it off the ground in 2027. Any comments? I've talked about the Lucy mission. The Lucy mission is on a trip to Jupiter orbit. It's not going to orbit Jupiter, but it's going to go to the Trojan asteroid system. You have, you know, L1, L2, 3, L4, and 5. That's Lagrange points. Out of Jupiter, you have it. You know, you have a Lagrange point system for Earth and the Moon. There's also a launch Lagrange point system for the Sun, and then the Jupiter. So if you, you know, you, if you go to a Lagrange point three, well, if you go to one, that, you know, that would be before you ever get to Jupiter. Two would be behind Jupiter. Then you have three, which is, would never be used, that's behind the sun. Then you have four and five. Four and five is made a right triangle between the planet and the sun in the forward direction to the orbit of Jupiter. You would have these Trojan asteroids sitting there. And also, and that's, you know, leading in front of it and then lagging behind, you'd have another group just far away, also at the orbit of Jupiter. The Lucy spacecraft is designed to go to both sections over the next, who knows how many years. I think it's 2025. I think it's supposed to get close to it. Over time, it will eventually leave that area and pass Earth again and rejoin Jupiter many years later. But this is one of these flights that is supposed to take overall decades for it to be completed. And the reason I bring it up now is they've had problems with solar panels. They have these fan-type solar panels. They open up one big circle. One on the port side, one on the starboard side. And they're massive. They're almost like 30 feet in diameter. After launch, one of them launched, one panel opened up and latched correctly. And opened up and just was short by maybe 10% or so. So over the last year, they've been trying to close the gap and to get that latch. And they tried over and over again. And make a long story short, they've given up. But since it's still 90% effective, good enough. It's not going to affect their mission. So we'll see how Lucy does. Any comments? Okay, that's pretty much it. I don't have all that much. A couple of topics I'll probably improve on a little bit and bring up next week. For now, we're going to turn it back to Roy. Thanks for the opportunity to doing all this, Roy, but we'll turn it back to you. AC2GS, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet.
This is AC2GS, and thank you, Paul, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report, for all that you do for the technical net, and all that you do for the club. You all really appreciate it. I especially do. And I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. I hope you enjoyed yourself. Hope you learned a few things. I hope the discussion of an artificial intelligence being able to pass the extra exam was interesting to you as it was to me. As always, I hope that you'll be able to come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. and we'll try and do this all over again. And as I often close the technical net, I take in mind Dick, A2RIW's closing line, be kind to each other. This is a good idea at most times, especially now. Still things are a little wacky out there, so be safe and take care of each other and be kind to each other. And I'd like to also quote the ancient Latin philosopher Epictetus, and that it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try to keep your mind a little open. If you close your mind, you don't learn anything new, and that's no fun. The best approach is try and learn something, at least one thing new every day. Anyway, this is AC2GS Roy here, and have a great week. Be safe. Have fun. And please, 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 come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we'll try and do this all over again. This is AC2GS. Go and clear.
AC2GS, before you run off, AC2SHM.
Yes.
Yeah, just wanted to talk about something real quick if you had a moment. Several times during the net, well, more than several times, it happened a bunch. Two different technical problems were appearing on my end. The node would either drop all together, well, sometimes it would drop with no message, sometimes it would drop and say, thanks for visiting message. And then sometimes the audio would just stop and there'd be a long pause with no audio. So I do get on other nets and don't have any issue there. It doesn't mean the problem is not on my end. But I was reviewing some of my settings and reading up on some of the documentation. I also have very old software because I haven't updated this node in a while. But I just wanted to pass that on and see if maybe we could work on that and figure out what's going on. And I can ask some of the IRLP gurus. But it has happened in the past. I remember it happening years ago for some reason. Something with this particular reflector was causing me similar things before, but not as often. So, anyway, just wanted to see if maybe the techies have any ideas what might be going on. AC2GS, KC2SHO.
And Y2H.
Yes, Lou. I think John missed our conversation probably because of the IRLP problem. So, if you want to talk about it to him, that would be fine.
Yeah, very good. Hello, John. Name here is Lou, November Yankee 2 Hotel. Yeah, I'm looking into it now. There's it's called COS lock. We're experiencing COS lock, which means that we're holding our node open beyond 4 minutes. So when we do that, it drops the connection. So right now I'm putting into our controller a timeout value of 3 minutes and 45 seconds. So that should preclude the disconnect. Now, you might have a timeout, but that the downtime on that would be a lot less. So, yeah, we think we have a handle on it, and we're shooting it now. John?
Real good. Yeah, and I realize it's a delicate dance to figure out all the timing things when multiple nodes and reflectors and things are involved. Yeah, and another comment would be, I realize most of your traffic is local there, so very little comes from IRLP or All-Star. But if we start to set the mindset that every once in a while people are letting things reset, I think that does help keep more nodes online for the entirety of the net. Maybe we can, and it's hard to get in a word in too when there are no breaks. So just some comments, you know, I it's not a complaint. I enjoy the net regardless. And I did also see that I wasn't able to get on to the chat room. Not sure if I was on the right link. It also could have just been that I needed to try a different browser or something. I didn't get real deep into that. But real good, guys. Thanks for the response, and I enjoyed the net.
Yeah, very good. Well, hopefully we'll get this squared away. I am going out of state in a week, actually a week from tomorrow. So from around next Sunday night, I'll monitor. I'll have my laptop with me anyway, so I can probably address any issues that come up. But all right. I'm going to clear NY2H. We clear. Roy, over to you.
Okay, very good, Lou. Thank you. Back to John. I don't know. I tried it. It might be something wonky with your computer. I just type in chat.ac2gs.com, and it takes me to the chat, a window where you can log in and sign up.
Ah, memories are flooding back in. I do recall you moved the chat over to your domain there. That's right. It slipped my mind. If you type it in the Google, it brings you to a Limark page that just doesn't have the chat option there, but the page still exists and doesn't redirect you. So, okay. Next time I'll look for that. I forgot that you had done that, but the memory does come back to me now that you've said it. Well, good. Oh, geez, I've got the other guys call already. Into something H, maybe. Anyway, real good. AC2GS from KC2SH. You guys had a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Lou is NY2H, and yeah, unfortunately, that page is full of bad information. It will tell you to go to